Here's a new way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Check out our page on Facebook. Network with fellow Issues Etc. junkies. Sign up to become a fan, and we'll send you updates on future topics and guests. You'll even find photos of in-studio guests, Todd drinking gelato, and highlights from our one-year anniversary open house. You'll discover that Todd, Jeff, and Craig really do have faces for radio on Facebook. Issues Etc. on Facebook. Another way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Facebook.com/IssuesETC.
Informed consent in ultrasound, basically you're in a situation where you want to give a patient, almost always a woman in this case, the option to get information. But let's not forget, you don't have to listen to any information as a part of informed consent. You can waive it. You can say, I don't care. I don't want to know anything. I'm going to let my doctor make the decision here. I'm going to let my husband or partner make the decision here. So when you mandate that you have to look at an ultrasound, you're starting to do what a lot of people are critical of in health reform, and that is you're starting to let government get between doctor and patient. It's one thing to say, here's an option, look at the ultrasound. It's another thing to say, as a counselor, I force you to look at this.
Well, that's Art Kaplan, a bioethicist at the University of Pennsylvania, talking about an ultrasound abortion law that was overturned by a district judge in Oklahoma recently. I remember the ultrasound, now the one that we had done, and now we're talking 18 years ago for our two children, respectively, kind of crude by today's standard. But I remember seeing the beating heart, hearing the sound, because there was a way of actually delivering that sound from the womb to our ears. And then as the child grew, seeing more and more of those features emerging on that ultrasound screen. And now the technology allows us to see some great detail there. And doctors do this as a normal part of prenatal health screening and care during a pregnancy. And all this law would require is an ultrasound and a description of the fetus for a mother seeking abortion. What could be wrong with that, and why was it overturned? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. It's Tuesday afternoon, August the 25th. We're coming to you live. We're going to be talking with Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse about the overturning of that abortion ultrasound law in Oklahoma. Also a little bit later, gender selection for babies. A little later in the hour, Helen Hull Hitchcock will join us. The Vatican has launched, actually it's been well into an investigation of Catholic women's religious orders, and now we're starting to see more of what that investigation entails. We'll see what Helen Hull Hitchcock has to say about that. Sam Shamoon joins us from answeringislam.org. We'll talk about Ramadan, which begins. It's a one-month-long fast for worldwide Islam. We'll see why they do it and what they're doing, and then we'll listen to some of your comments from the Issues Etc. comment line on this Tuesday afternoon. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E. Our in-studio email address is talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org, or you can Twitter us right here in the studio with questions or comments, @IssuesETC, @IssuesETC. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
Why are feminist groups outraged by this ruling of the district judge there in Oklahoma? Not outraged, but why were they outraged by the fact that the law would have injected an ultrasound and a description of the fetus into the process of a woman seeking an abortion?
Well, that's a very interesting question. You would think that informed consent would be a watchword that everybody could agree on. But in point of fact, the reason that feminists are not that keen on informed consent is that what they really want is to sort of neutralize the impact of childbearing on women and their lives and their decision-making. And so what feminists have been promoting is the idea that people are entitled to unlimited sexual activity without a live baby ever showing up. And so you don't want anything coming between that the sexual act and the continuation of your life without a live baby. And so the actual deliberation process, that's not of interest to them. Whether it's really the best thing for everybody in all cases, that's not really of that much interest. Not to mention the fact that some women will look at the baby and say, oh my gosh, this is a real baby. This is not a blob of tissue. I want to keep the baby. And then she would be forced to confront the reality that the whole feminist line of casual sex and sex without live babies and so on, that has all been completely misleading. And so they don't want anybody looking too closely at that whole line of argumentation that they've been putting out for so long.
Okay, I want to know, because this is unclear to me, would the law have required the woman to view the ultrasound, or would it simply have required the physician to perform it, obviously view it if he's going to do the procedure correctly, and then at least digest what he sees there, she sees there, for the woman seeking an abortion?
Or to offer her the option of whether to look at it or not. You know, the interview that you quoted from there was an interview with a bioethicist at University of Pennsylvania, and that was an extremely misleading interview. You can't tell, I can't tell, I don't know the answer to your question, whether it would have been required for the woman to look at it, or whether the information would have been presented and say, here's something you can look at, or whether that was the sort of thing where your eyes are going to glaze over and you're not going to pay attention to it. I honestly don't know what the law would have required and what the issue was there. He was trying to make it sound like this was some kind of draconian interference of the state in the doctor-patient relationship. Well, the fact of the matter is that every pharmaceutical that is prescribed in the entire country, including over-the-counter stuff, has all kinds of informed consent material that is absolutely required of every manufacturer to put all of that verbiage that's required by the FDA. That all has to go into every package of aspirin, every prescription drug, and everything else. Now, is anybody required to actually look at it? Obviously not. Most people look at it, throw it away, their eyes glaze over, or whatever. But they are required to put it in, and no one denies the authority of the state to make that stuff available. And so, you know, whether this law was going to, as you say, make the doctor do the ultrasound and then force the woman to sit in the chair and stare at it, or whether the doctor could say, well, we took these pictures, what do you say, you want to look at it, here's what it says, and there was some prescribed verbiage that the doctor was going to have to read to them, comparable to your Miranda rights, you know, that this is a live baby, blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't remember exactly what it was. But I think that description, that required description, is the thing that people found the most objectionable, that this is a living being, this is a living, separate, distinct person in your womb. That's what they're arguing over, I feel quite sure. And besides, looking at the ultrasound image, as you already so eloquently described it in your own case, it's much more compelling than reading a bunch of lawyer-generated boilerplate that's got all those disclaimers on it.
A U.S. clinic, I mean, here in the United States, won't be doing this for United States citizens, but it is doing it for British parents who want to choose the sex of their child. We have laws here in the United States. You can't do it here. However, this U.S. clinic now allowing British parents to choose, through genetic engineering, the sex of your child.
That's from Fox News this weekend. Jen, is it possible sex selection here in the United States as long as you're not a U.S. citizen?
Well, that's what they're reporting. You know, they're reporting that this clinic in New York City is proudly and defiantly offering this service to non-U.S. citizens and saying that he's allowed to do it. I don't know if anybody's going after him and saying, no, you can't do this for British citizens or people from India or wherever else it's actually legal. You're not allowed to do that. But, the reason is pretty obvious why you want to prescribe sex selection, because it's just too creepy. And I was pleased to hear the commentators on Fox being creeped out and being disgusted by it. And I think that it's a good thing that we not lose all of our moral sensibilities that is revolted by something like that.
What is fundamentally, I mean, deal with the basic moral issue here, if you could, Jen. What is fundamentally wrong with sex selection Okay, regardless of whether it takes place in the context of abortion or in the context of in vitro fertilization, whatever it may be.
Well you know what? You see, actually, Todd, as far as I understand the technology, it all takes place in the context of abortion in this way. If you're doing pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, which is what they're talking about, what that means is that you do, as I understand it, and I'm not a doctor of medicine, as you know, but as I understand it, what they do is they create the embryo, and then they look at it, and they decide whether they're going to let it live or not. And the embryo's all outside the womb and everything. It's all in the test tube or the petri dish or whatever they're doing these days. And they look at it, and they say, oh, this is a boy. I don't want a boy. The boys are too much trouble. Throw that one away. Let's take the girl, you know. They don't know until they fertilize the egg. They don't know whether it's going to be a boy or a girl, you know. So whether you think that that is somehow different from performing an abortion, I think the issue is precisely the same, that once you fertilize the egg, you have a distinct person there. And, you know, if you believe life begins at conception, do you think it begins there in the test tube, or doesn't start until it's implanted in the womb, you know? And you know, for a lot of us, that is a distinction without a difference, that your life begins when the egg and the sperm meet, and you've got a distinct being that is capable of developing into a distinct human person. And so the issues, as far as I'm concerned, the moral issues are precisely the same, whether it's in the petri dish or whether it's in the womb. It's only people who are doing the if I may use the term, Jesuitical hair splitting, to say that it's not a person until it implants in the womb. It's something completely other than that until it implants in the womb. Those are the people who might think that there's two different moral issues, but I think it's one and the same issue myself.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason University. She's author of the book Smart Sex and Love and Economics. You'll find a link to Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris and the Ruth Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Just click on demand. Issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Jennifer, thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back, Helen Hull Hitchcock is going to join us. Now, this investigation, I take it, has been underway for some time. The Vatican investigating Catholic women's religious orders. They're concerned about the doctrine and the practice in these American institutions. We'll find out why from Helen Hull Hitchcock of Women for Faith and Family after this. Here's your chance to win a $100 gift certificate to Concordia Publishing House. Email 10 friends the latest Issues Etc. YouTube video, and we'll register you to win a gift certificate from Concordia Publishing House. We'll announce the winner on August 28th. Just go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, copy and paste the video's embed code into an email, send it to 10 friends, relatives, or fellow parishioners. Be sure to send a carbon of your email with your name and address to talkback@issuesetc.org. Tell 10 friends about Issues Etc. and tune in on Friday, August the 28th to find out if you're the winner of a $100 gift certificate to Concordia Publishing House. Go to issuesetc.org, click promote, and send the Issues Etc. YouTube video to your friends.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
When you hear the words new music for your congregation, do you automatically think of mindless praise music? Well, think again. Liturgy Solutions has new compositions for all seasons of the church year that are firmly grounded in the Reformation truths of Christ for us in word and sacrament. Check us out on the web at www.liturgysolutions.com. At Liturgy Solutions, we don't do worship, we're deep into liturgy. www.liturgysolutions.com.